Jonathan, hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.
Hello, welcome to Bagel Tech Photo, the weekly show on photography from the Bagel Tech Network. I'm Ian Rankin, and we're here to talk the week in photography. No questions from you this week, because we've only had a couple anyway, but also we've got a ton of news from CES. So, and based on the fact that Chris has been our man at CES, he's going to report back and tell us everything he's seen. I'm joined by our usual two pros, Chris Forsman for Ars Technica. How are you doing, mate?
Good. Freezing cold, but okay.
Yeah, fresh from digging snow.
Yeah. After I got in on a flight that was late because of the snow.
Yeah. Ars Technica and the MPAA, I see, have been having a bit of a hug session.
Yeah,
Are you off their Christmas card list now?
We're fast friends. What are you talking about?
Righto, yeah. Have a read of that. Go to Ars Technica, have a read of that story, because it's pretty interesting.
Next. You know our history of promoting piracy, so, you know.
Yeah, I mean, you gave me the passwords and stuff, didn't you, for panic and that kind of stuff. Next to him, we got Alex G-Man Fox. How you doing, pal?
I'm all right. I'm wondering why I haven't got any ripped off passwords.
I'm struggling. You're coming on the photo walk tomorrow, aren't you, with Elmug?
Yeah, why not?
I don't know about
it's only down the road from me.
I'm struggling on number of layers, mate, because today it looks like it's pretty balmy out there.
Well, I'll put it this way. I walked to the school this morning and I didn't even wear a hat.
Good man. Yeah. I'm looking forward to tomorrow, I have to say. It's going to be so cool.
Well, 5 degrees, if you call that cool.
It's a journey out for me, mate. A day on the train.
Yeah, exactly. Coming to a real city.
It's the first picture I've taken for pleasure in about 2 years, apart from the kids on Christmas Day. So I'm really looking forward to it. The week in photography, there has been a whole pile of stuff, really. I mean, CES has done... I mean, it's never been a big place for photography, but all of a sudden, it's seems to have come good. There's tons of stuff out there. One of the first things that I thought we could talk about is the wireless connectivity that's come out on cameras. Now, I've been saying for 2 years, if the camera wants to keep up, it's going to have to start thinking more about internet flicker and transposing its data into other formats very, very quickly and without having to be plugged in. And it's taken till this week, really, for it to kind of hit the mark. Now, the Polaroid camera is the first one. And Chris, you said you've had a hold of that.
Yeah, I got to play with it for a short while on the floor yesterday morning before I had to head to the Las Vegas airport. So it's really interesting. It's very thin. It's a little bit thicker than I'd say the average smartphone.
Right.
And the back of it looks like a smartphone, like literally looks like an Android phone. You flip it over and it looks like a digital camera. It's a little strange, like, to see it. The dumb thing about it's 16 megapixels, which I think is dumb, but I talked to a bunch of vendors and basically they're just like, look, this is what the people who buy these cameras, this is what they know, megapixels. If ours is 12 and the other guy's is 16, they're going to buy the 16.
But I think the thing that's different about this, though, that really sets it apart, Chris, is I'm just reading through the specs here next to me. Mm-hmm. 16 megapixels, yes, but the apertures stopped at f3.1 to f5.6, which is pretty good.
I'd say it's average for this style of camera.
Well, I would say they probably had to do that because of the fact it's got a 3x optical zoom. Now, I mean, optical zoom's just kind of really very much unheard of, I would have thought, in a lot of the cell phone type stuff. And the interesting thing here is that these guys haven't tried to take a digital compact camera and add connectivity, which is what Kodak have done that we'll talk about in a minute. What they've done is they've made a cell phone and then put a camera in it, and a proper camera at that.
Yep.
Oh, okay.
You said it.
Did you look closely at any of the pictures that were taken on it, or?
I was gonna go from the discussion about the ridiculous 16 megapixel sensor onto the fact that it's if you've used an Android phone to take pictures, you know that it's not always the fastest camera. It's not very responsive.
Mm.
And the 16 megapixels doesn't make it any better on this Polaroid.
Right.
And so here's my impression. And because I just did a review of the Z340 instant camera with a built-in Zinc printer. And Polaroid has great ideas, but the execution is just lacking. Like, it's not all the way thought through.
Mm.
Does that make sense? Like, good for Polaroid. They are really doing something different.
This is kind of a bit more, sort of a prototype, if you like, rather than.
It's, well, I mean, this is, the press people told me this is pretty much what's going to ship.
Yeah, yeah. No, but I mean, yeah. In terms of the way it's working, you'd have expected it to be a kind of first prototype.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm. Alex, any thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm really, really happy to have done this because of, I look at it as what we want. There's two directions it's coming from. You've got Apple trying to make a better camera in a phone, and now you've got a camera manufacturer trying to make a better camera into a phone. So they're coming from two opposite directions, but eventually they're going to meet somewhere in the middle. And I think this is the way to do it. I think it's taking a camera and pushing bits into it that make it as useful as a phone. Now, the slowness is possibly due to the Android software, because Android phone cameras are notoriously slow. They will crack that. Google will crack that. And, you know, so I think we need it coming from both directions, because I don't think Apple in any time soon are going to be able to give us a three-time optical camera. But for me, I mean, I think about what most people use their phones for now. Now, if you buy a phone now and you use it as a camera, a little bit of surfing the net, and then make phone calls, I think this idea, this way of going is definitely the future. And it also, it makes Apple have to up their game, because if they get this right, it could be a serious contender as an Android phone, or sorry, an Android camera stroke phone rather than an Android phone stroke camera. So I'm really excited. And Polaroid are the only other people with any sort of innovation. You know, they've done the printer, they've done the, you know, they've done everything. They've remade the old style Polaroid into a digital camera. They're the only people that have actually doing what Apple are doing, but they're doing it from camera into phone rather than phone into camera. So I'm actually really excited about the prospects.
Right.
I mean, the thing that we're talking about here is, if you look at the iPhone, yeah, it takes great pictures, but it's a phone within a cell phone. It's a camera within a cell phone. Whereas this, you know, this has got a variable f-stop. It's got variable ISO. It's acting like a camera that'll also link through to the internet and make a phone call. It's the opposite way around, but they've still kept the form factor the same, because the one thing that we've always said is, unless the form factor changes, the compact market's going to die.
Mm-hmm.
So this is hitting a lot of those right points, surely, yeah?
Yeah, of course. And also, if you look at the move from phones at the moment, especially with, I think it's HTC and I think Samsung, the actual phones are getting slightly bigger, because nobody's now impressed the fact that you can make something tiny anymore. We actually want it to do more. Oh, okay, yeah, you can make a phone on a watch, well done, but I can't see what I'm doing, so what's the point of having a phone on a watch?
Mm.
And this is definitely doing the right thing. And if the form factor that people get used to is slightly larger, then I imagine someone like Polaroid will be able to cram all the phone bits and the Android bits in and give us an even better quality camera. So watch out, iPhone. I think this really, really could be the future.
So, Chris, having held this and had a play with it and taken a picture with it, how far has it got to go before you would say, right, okay, stuff it, I'll actually take this as my phone?
Well, it doesn't have 3G. I mean, it's not a phone.
Yeah.
It only works over Wi-Fi. So, you can think of it more as like an iPod Touch with a real camera built in.
Well, no, but it's got GSM radios and WCDMA radios in.
Not the ones that I saw.
Yeah, no, the Polaroid is coming with 850, 1900 and 210 megahertz WCDMA and 850, 900, 1800 and 1900 GSM radios, as well as Wi-Fi, as well as Bluetooth, as well as GPS, and in case aliens invade, they've thrown in an FM radio antenna as well as. So there you go. The top end one is going to come with all of that. So whether that means that's going to be a phone as well or not, I don't know. You might be right there, but there's certainly always on connectivity potential there over the GSM and CDMA networks. So
yeah, the deciding factor for me would be iOS. So
So you're saying I ain't having it anyway.
What's that?
You're saying I'm not having it anyway because it's not an iPhone.
No, I mean, what I got to play with, I wouldn't use a point and shoot camera like this anyway. This is not the kind of camera that I would bother with to have a separate camera, even though it's got a zoom, even though you can adjust the ISO and all that stuff. That's nice, but you know what I mean? This is the kind of like essentially low-end camera that for me personally, it just isn't going to cut it. Yeah. If I'm going to go with a low-end camera, I'll just be happy to use my iPhone. But I mean, they got this. I mean, I'm holding up my iPhone now, and I would say it's slightly thicker.
It couldn't not be, I suppose.
And about the same shape, just maybe a tiny bit bigger, about the same thickness. So, I mean, it's, you know, like I said, I think they're on the right track. I think it, you know, needs a little work. Personally, it could be improved. Do I think that a lot of other people will really like it? Yes.
So what, yes. I mean, again, Alex, this is absolutely kind of mirroring your point. Are you saying then that we're really happy that Polaroid have done this because it'll make Apple copy them?
Well, I don't, not just Apple. I think it's not just Apple because you're talking,
well, no,
Kodak's
but
Kodak's doing something similar too.
Yeah, but they're not going to run iOS either.
On the market in general, to embrace the idea.
No, that's the point. They're not running iOS either. But what you're saying is you want an iPhone, but you want it to do this.
No, I'm
I love what Kodak's doing, but I want it on my iPhone.
I'm happy with what my iPhone does. I'm fine with it.
No.
What I'm saying is the Polaroid and the Kodak, and they're going to be pushing Canon and Nikon and I guess it's Sony. I was going to say Minolta, but Sony. You know, they're going to be pushing them to embrace the concept because now, you know, they're going to have customers coming and say, well, why can't I just take my pictures and put them on Flickr on the internet? You know what I mean? It's gonna push the market in that direction where they've been kind of like, you know, maybe slightly dipping their toe in it in the past.
Yeah, no, I don't know.
So that's why I think it's cool. I mean, like I said, you know, for me as a photographer, it doesn't cut it.
Okay, we just put it this way: iPhone came out with what it was called the iPhone, and it was. Wasn't even 3G, was it? It was just, if you like, iPhone Edge. 2G, if you want to call it anything. And how many years we got? 4 years now?
5 years, Three years?
Is it 5 years?
Yeah.
5 years on, we've got a 4S and this, that, and the other. If they carry on, I mean, what I'd like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'd like Polaroid to be successful in this because they're the inventive people.
Mm-hmm.
Get someone like Samsung, and mind you, they make cameras all. Get someone like HTC in bed with someone like Nikon or Canon, and let's see what they can put together. And then get Google to make a really good, you know, an operating system. And then let's see who wins the battle. Because you've got to remember, not the whole world uses an iPhone. They use Android phones. So the sluggishness that we see and we're affected by, there's an awful lot of people that even at this stage with that camera wouldn't even notice the difference. I think it's a brilliant thing for everyone.
I think there's a question in my mind about what is a successful compact camera market. How many units do you need to sell to be a successful compact camera unit? And there was a good article this week that said that Samsung was looking to quadruple its camera sales to 500,000 units per annum. Well, I mean, Nokia, bad as they are at the moment, sold 1 million units of the D800 last quarter. So if the compact market is that low, you're talking about, at the moment, quadrupling sales. Samsung sells 100,000 compact cameras, and they're a fairly prominent force in the compact market. So if this thing's really going to actually take off, you'd be well as to make this a camera that's got a phone capability within it, because the phone market is a significantly greater market to push your product out to. And even if you only make a 10% penetration or something like that into the phone market, that's still vastly more than you're selling as a compact camera maker anyway. Plus you're outstripping everything that's in the cell phone market. That's where the short-sightedness comes for me.
Well, I think there's really two ways to approach this that I see. And they're going to appeal to different markets. One's going to be a much smaller market. One's going to be the mass market. And I think Polaroid is going after that, what the style, I think, is going to appeal to the mass market. You're talking basically a proper cell phone that also has, you know, a zoom lens, better camera controls, etc. I think that's going to be a market that's going to be more, you know, there's going to be more potential consumers there. There's another market that I think is absolutely people like myself. Like, I want a Canon G12 with built-in 3G data and Wi-Fi. Mm. And then wherever I am, I can shoot pictures and it can automatically upload to Flickr, yeah, to Instagram, to whatever.
And you don't have to edit that. You can get it to shove up a 2-megapixel version, a 5-megapixel version, an 8-megapixel version. Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah, definitely. Any last thoughts, Alex?
No.
Okay.
I like it. I think it looks rugged. It looks strong. It looks, you know, I like the backside of it. It, you know, it looks like a proper camera, and you turn it around and it looks like a proper phone. What more could you
want? The design is nice. It's...
So what are we thinking in comparison then with the Kodak stuff that's been released this week? They've brought out a whole range of compact cameras and apps to go with them, as well as they're called the Easy Share and Playful range. How do they compare? Because they've got always on Wi-Fi as well, but it's only Wi-Fi. There's no GSM stuff in this, or FM radio. So where does that sit in the relationship of what's gone on with Polaroid?
Well, Kodak, this is how Kodak tried to survive the digital market, which they didn't quite achieve, by having those easy docking cameras, because they were the first people to do that thing. And this is the, you know, the modern equivalent of an easy docking camera. You dock it by not having to dock it. Mm-hmm. Wi-Fi is all well and good, but, you know, that's okay around the house. It's great for your kids. It'd be great if you could link it into something like what if they have Photo Stream on, you know, so it works well. You take your picture in around the house and it will load up to Flickr or whatever. I mean, you've got to remember, most people, if you go out for a night, you're pretty hard pushed if you can't find a Wi-Fi connection, even if you have to pay for one. But I mean, you've got to remember, London, before the Olympics, the whole of London is going to be covered by free Wi-Fi. You know, it's something O2 are doing, and, you know, so something like that. And I imagine most of the main cities in the world will all be covered by free Wi-Fi with a few adverts before long. So you might not need GSM in a phone before long.
But is that going to be the downfall of cameras into Wi-Fi? Because those wireless networks are going to want you to input your email address. They want to create an account with a password. And all of a sudden, your camera is no longer a camera that's just taking a picture and bumping it up. You're going to have a keyboard functionality within it. And it's the access to the Wi-Fi network that's going to kill the opportunity of the digital camera getting to that Wi-Fi network.
Well, I suppose you can pre-set it up via your laptop before you go out. You can make sure you're... It's like, for instance, with O2, the telephone people. When you first set it up, and you can do it via your phone or you can do it via the computer, you just register your phone. You register your email address with that Wi-Fi network for your phone, and that's it. In fact, with O2, I think you register the telephone number. And so you could just have one setup. You set it up before you leave the house on your computer, and it will jump onto the Wi-Fi networks that you've either prepaid for or are free, but you have to register. I mean, again, it's a good idea. I think all these things they've realized that they cannot compete with smartphone cameras of whatever make because of the connectivity. And their market is either going to, they're either going to succeed with this or they're all going to die. So I think this is it's not so much their last hurrah, but finally they've realised that this is what they've got to do to stand any chance whatsoever. So, you know, good luck to everybody in, you know, getting a piece of the action. Because I think the only thing that we as photographers are going to get, we are going to get better cameras that are easier to use for the masses, not necessarily rubbish cameras that are on rather expensive phones, just to get a half-decent camera.
So, Chris, having held the Polaroid and then looking at what their Kodak are offering, do you say that this is doomed, or do you feel quite buoyant about it?
No, I wouldn't say it's doomed. You know, like I said, it's this is something that should have come already. Maybe the issue has been pricing. Maybe the issue has been getting you know, chips that are efficient enough, or, you know, as far as power is concerned, you know, you're talking about battery life is a concern. Mm. Maybe it's just been the camera industry slow to catch on to the fact that people are just like using their cell phones all the time to take pictures. So I think it's still early to make a call on that either way. And like I said, I still think there's going to be cameras that appeal to different users. There's going to be the ones who just want basically a cell phone with a better camera in it. They want something that size, that weight, that is their phone, but just has better, you know, a zoom lens and better controls and maybe higher resolution for some.
But I mean, I kind of looked at this and I got a big beaming smile on my face when I first saw it, because I thought, oh, here we go. Kodak's, you know, having a last wriggle before they finally go flatline. And the more I thought about it, the more I just thought, actually, this is probably the nail in the coffin, because they've put a lot of money into developing this. They're going to put a bit of money into marketing and trying to sell it. And actually, there'll be a few units go, but this isn't really going to get, because too many people are going to do too much too quickly now. Done this 18 months ago, they'd have cleaned up. But right now, it's going to be their downfall, maybe.
Well, I don't think this is going to be their downfall.
Well, no, they're already down, but I'm going to say
yeah.
You know, this is the last pulse beat, definitely. Mm-hmm. Panoramic phone lenses. Tamagu came out with a 360 imaging device, and also Kagoto have come out with 360 imaging devices for Android. I mean, there's a couple of them out on the market now. Are these things going to get some traction? Do people really want them?
I do.
You want one? Why do you want one, Alex?
You know what? Because I was looking at them, and I was thinking, you know, these days we're a good use. We're in a conference. We're in a room. We're in a meeting, for instance, and we want to record what's going on, so we chuck our phone down on the table and record it. Well, something like this, you throw your iPhone, well, I wouldn't throw it, but you put your phone on the table, and you have now recorded the entire meeting, not only audio, but video. And it also gives you the ability, once you've recorded it, what I like about it is if you look at the software that comes with it, you're not looking like a fisheye dome to capture the whole image. What you're doing is you're just able to slide around using the cursor and look at different parts of the picture. But the picture still looks as if you're panning with a camera.
Mm.
So it's not that distorted fisheye nonsense. So there's an awful lot of functionality in this that, you know, I think, I mean, we always go on about security and things, and yes, it's a great idea, this sort of lens. But to be able to, say, be at a party and hold your camera and take a video at a party. Say you're taking a video of your kid blowing out his birthday cake. Then that's a great picture. But wouldn't it be even better that once it's on the internet, people can then look at the kid taking his picture, grandma and grandpa, and then spin around the rest of the room to look at everyone else watching the child taking the blowing out the candles. Mm. There's so much family-friendly, if you want, usefulness of this sort of video photography. I think it's a really, really good idea.
Yeah, Darren in the chat room saying, great for holidays, taking a 360 panorama of some of the places that you go.
Yeah. Well, you can join in the whole atmosphere by being able to see what's around the photo as well as the actual image itself. I think I reckon it could be a whole new style of photography. Forget this 3D nonsense. I think we've all agreed that 3D is gimmick. But this, a panoramic, which you shoot a single panoramic, a 360 panoramic, I'd quite like to say have a Nikon, which had a proper camera, if you like, a Canon, doesn't matter, and you had like an aerial that actually came up above your head when you were taking the picture with a 360 panorama on top, for instance. So you're not in the shot, but the panorama of where you are.
Do you want to blow up buildings as well?
Do I want to blow up
buildings? Do you want it to blow up buildings and turn into a hang glider? And
Well, yeah, if it needs to. But no, I just think it'd be great to actually be able to, say, hold something above your head and take a single shot.
Yeah.
And atmospherically, like holiday, yeah, exactly. Atmospherically, it would be brilliant, because you're not even going to know what's in the whole picture.
You could really upset the police with a gadget like that, couldn't you?
Well, that's my main point, but I wasn't going to say it.
Yeah. Chris, what's your thoughts on these? Do you want them or?
It's never particularly interested me. I mean, they've had similar devices around. I remember one of the first ones came out when the Coolpix 9, I want to say the 950 or 990 was the hot camera. I don't know if you guys remember that far back, but it was the same kind of thing. Like, there's an adapter that screwed into the lens, and then this whole mirror system plugged in, and you could do the exact same thing. obviously, the resolution was much lower, and the software was much slower back then. So they basically shrunk the whole thing down to snap onto your cell phone and do it.
I was kind of like you when I saw this thing, and I was kind of like, okay. But just listening to Alex there go on about it, I've kind of thought a bit more about it, and it's piqued me interest on it. And there's a great comment just come out from the chat room. Well, what about if you take the 360 panel that comes with it and then do something with the variable focus like the Lytro does?
Mm-hmm.
Again, there's, you know, it's a mixture of technologies there. Good point. There's tons you can go with this.
I forgot. I got to see the Lytro too.
Oh, and?
Yeah.
And? Yeah. You like it?
It's different. It's different. I only got about 10-15 minutes with it. I was spending a lot of time like learning how to actually use it, and it's weird to hold because it's like this kind of squarish aluminum tube about this long.
Yeah.
And it's about, you know, it's like 2 inches square. It's weird, you know. It took a little while to kind of figure out like how it was comfortable for me to hold it and to shoot with it. But I mean, it perfectly works exactly like they say it does.
Mm.
You don't focus it. There's no aperture. There's no shutter. It's got an 8x. It's got basically an 8x 2.8 all the time zoom lens.
And the price is not bad.
Yeah, and you can't take an out of focus picture with it.
Cool.
I bet I could try.
Yes. Well, I know a few people that would give it a run. My mother.
You can't actually get too close, I learned. You can't get too close because there's just a limitation to what the light field can capture and how much the algorithms can change it. There is I think that she said it was about 5 inches, but I mean, that's closer than you can really get to any kind of object and take a picture of it anyway with the camera. So.
I agree. 5 inches is more than enough. Alex.
Yeah, what?
Nikon cocked up this week, and they managed to shove an image of the upcoming D800 on their website. Did you break into a sweat?
It's actually a bit older than you think, that image. It's been around a little while. I don't know why I keep desperately trying to disprove it. Because the thing I should be doing is jumping up and down going, yeah, it's real, it's going to happen. And yeah, of course it's real and it's going to happen, but I keep trying to find reasons why this might not be a real picture of the D800. But they need to bring this camera out because of it's been far too long since they've brought out anything to replace, the 700, basically.
Mm.
But they're still really within that 300, 300S, and 700. And it's too long ago. They really need something that has got a high-ish megapixel, something to bridge between the $6,000 and the £6,000 and £1,000 camera.
So what's this giving you? What's this giving you that the 700's not, or the 3DS isn't?
Well, mainly it's megapixels. I think that's the problem. I mean, there's a point of a lot of these $6,000 cameras or pound camera, they're great, but you know, they're extraordinary amounts of money, and this is like it's still a professional end camera. But one of the things you don't get, I mean, with Nikon is high megapixels, and a lot of my clients, for instance, they, you know, we know that the megapixelage isn't basically the be all and end all, but they don't. And if they want a 70 meg or 100 meg file from me, that's what they want. And it doesn't matter how much I try and convince them that they're wasting their time and my time.
The grain's really high, but...
Yeah, exactly. But if that's what they want, then that's what they'll be given. And most of the cameras that you need to shoot that are, you know, they're medium format cameras, and they're great in the studio. But so much of my work is I'm building basically portable studios around works of art in very awkward situations. And I need something that's going to give me a lot more ease of use than using a Hasselblad or a Mamiya or something.
So are you seriously thinking about this over the D4 from last week and going and using this for work?
Yeah, Without a doubt.
Oh.
Because of, I mean, I could, if, when you've got as much control as I normally have over all the variables in the shot, you don't need a D4. You don't even need a D3.
Mm.
I mean, for instance, we were talking with, is it Kevin last week?
Yeah.
And he was still shooting with a D2X.
Yeah.
Because he's got control over all the variables. We don't need speed. Kevin didn't need megapixelage. And, you know, you don't have a low noise problem. So I would say for me, if someone could come up with a 30 to 40 megapixel camera where I could go somewhere, I mean, I might be 30 foot up in a stately home, hanging off the edge of a tripod, trying to get a shot because of the, there's no way I can block out the dome light coming through the ceiling.
Alex, you know, someone made this camera. It's called a Hasselblad.
Yeah, but you try doing that one-handed hanging off a blooming banister. It you haven't got, the Hasselblad doesn't have the variables. You really need to be able to control everything on the Hasselblad.
Ultimately, that'll be the downfall of Hasselblad, won't it? We're not making one-handed cameras.
Well, it's just, yeah. They're big, they're heavy, they're bulky, they're awkward, and they cost £25,000 a go, and you don't tend to want to drop them.
It's like Bang & Olufsen.
Yeah, do you want to drop a D800? I mean...
Well, for $2,000, I wouldn't be as worried.
Alex,
fair enough.
I can buy new lenses or something for between $500 and $5,000, not starting at $5,000. That does make a big difference too.
Wise words from Alex Fox, the man who collects Nikon cameras like my son gets Thomas the Tank Engine characters.
Mm-hmm.
Man. Casio showed off their new imaging technology this week at CES. And basically, if you've got a picture of your pet and it pops its clogs, they've invented photo taxidermy. They will take the picture of your pet and they will make it three-dimensional.
Mm-hmm. It's actually frightening.
Oh, mate, you wait till you see the cat's eyes.
It's scary.
That cat looks like it's been run over and its eyes are bulged. It's derisive. Even animal lovers everywhere will be hurling at these. They just look awful. How much is this? You can do this at Costco. Take your animal in, get a picture at Costco, and then come back and pick up a virtual version of it later.
Yeah, you'd be quicker getting a CAT scan. Boom, boom. You know what? You know the end of Roger Rabbit when the guy who's really a toon, you know, we think he's human and he turns into a toon.
Oh, yeah,
he's got funny,
yeah,
bulgy eyes.
Mm.
That's him,
mate. That is him. That is him.
Christopher Lloyd, wasn't it?
Christopher Lloyd, yeah, definitely.
If someone did, I can imagine having a picture of you could be done for child abuse if you gave them a picture of your child and they did this.
Well, Pet Pixels covered this story and they've called it transdimensional taxidermy.
Something weird would have covered it.
I didn't stop at Casio's booth. I walked by it.
I'm not surprised. God.
But I did see this and it did creep me out.
It looks creepy on the pictures, let alone in real life.
Yeah.
It looks like some really, really bad art student's done a really bad plastic porcelain Dalmatian and stuck a pump up the bum of a cat and blown it up or something. It's awful.
Mm-hmm. Not good. Not good at all. Last story then. We're talking about Lightroom 4 is out in beta. So not in the total thing. Adobe Lightroom 4, it's the file storage and basic manipulation software that they do, kind of akin to Aperture, but not this time. Alex, you were saying you were quite interested in this before we started.
Yeah, I mean, I was looking at... I've had Lightroom when it first came out, and to be honest, I've still got... I take it was Lightroom 1, I can't remember what number it is, and I never bothered upgrading it because I didn't like it.
Mm.
I mean, for most of the functionality I had in Lightroom, I used Bridge and Photoshop, and that's where I stuck. But I was reading about the updates in this Lightroom and have taken some of the most useful features out of Photoshop and stuck it into this beta of Lightroom. And I would say, unless you're into really high-end manipulation, this may actually be enough, even for most professional photographers, because they've taken a lot of the fine shadow and highlight detail correction and have taken... obviously, they've got the full RAW correction, which is built in. A lot of the very useful intricacies, which basically turn a decent picture into a professional-looking picture, they have now put into this. So I would say, unless you want to do some heavy manipulation, this version of Lightroom, and if you think about price differential, this version of Lightroom is possibly going to damage the sales of the full version of Photoshop. Because if I didn't have a full version, I think I would look at Lightroom and then look at a cheap program, possibly for a bit of layering. But I really, really like this update. I think they may have shot themselves in the foot.
I mean, I was just there's no layering in this. So, I mean, that functionality within Photoshop is unique, definitely. And I use layers an awful lot for like the overlay layer for casting through and changing opacity to get different effects on images. So I would struggle with this, definitely. Chris, you were about to say something there.
Well, I was just going to say, I think Adobe maybe shot its own self in the foot with its pricing anyway.
It is ridiculous, isn't it?
What's the cost on this?
Well, Lightroom's normally about...
$200, $300?
Yeah,
it's £180 normally, something around that.
So it ain't $44 for Aperture.
This is a stage up, obviously. But, I mean, Aperture, I've played with Aperture because we all bought it because it was whatever it was. And I realised, why did I buy this? They've just got £45 or whatever it was out of me for absolutely nothing. And I just linked it to that photo stream because I couldn't bring myself to link my photo stream to iPhoto. And that's the only thing I used it for.
Well, I mean, Chris, have you got Adobe or have you got Photoshop? I'll start again. Have you got Lightroom or Aperture? And how do you use them?
I've never honestly really used them. I always install the betas when they come out because you get the 30-day trial.
Tight ass.
I just want to keep up with it and understand what's going on.
Sure.
But it's just never really fit my personal workflow. I mean, you have to understand for the last 4 years, 99% of what I shoot gets cropped down to 640 pixels wide and put on Ars Technica. So, and everything else is just Instagram on Flickr.
Yeah.
That's just the reality for me. I'm shooting pictures of products for reviews and, I only very occasionally do like any serious work and then it's mostly basic portraits. So I have Photoshop CS3. And that's what I still use.
Yeah,
I just don't have the work. You know, I don't have paid work enough to justify investing money in either tool at this point for me.
I use Aperture, but I mean, I tend to use it nothing more than an ability to find photos faster because it's so visual. Because it's the thumbnails are so big, it's very easy to find stuff within basic folders, and it just strips Finder to the bone in terms of that, because Finder's bloody awful trying to find files.
Agreed. Yeah, agreed.
That's what I use Bridge for. Mm. But one of the things I'd say is if you were, say, a wedding photographer, with some of the new functionality in this, sort of a noise reduction, and some vignetting problems and moire problems and stuff like that. Is that how you say it? I can never say the word.
Moire.
When it looked moire, yeah, I'm too French. If you can eliminate them, which are the main problems when you're doing something like a wedding shoot, then you've got no need, if you're a half-decent photographer, you've got no need to actually ever fire up Photoshop. You could do a batch process on most of your pictures in this and correct all the things that needed, especially things like noise reduction and vignetting. Batch correct them in this, and that's all you'll ever need. So I would have said, especially if you're going to do something like setting up a photo sharing, e.g. you take pictures for a wedding and people can purchase them and download them themselves, that sort of thing. This would be perfect to be able to batch process and then edit them and put them up on the internet.
But yeah, the price, dude.
It's quicker and a lot cheaper than what did I pay for the last Photoshop? Something extraordinary, and that was just an upgrade. This is cheaper than a Photoshop upgrade.
We need to finish on one simple point, fellas. We've got some competition coming because Lord Bagel has just tweeted out, coming soon, Lord Bagel Photo on the Bagel Lord Network, the photography show where I tell you how terrible you are at taking pictures. Oh, dear.
Well, we're very self-deferential anyway, so we tell each other we're terrible.
Yeah, and we'll get to prove it tomorrow.
So you guys don't want to hear about the Fuji X1 Pro, or?
Go on, tell us about the Fuji X1 Pro, Chris.
We'll lean back and listen.
It's really awesome.
Oh, really?
It's really, yeah. It's rock solid. The lenses are, imagine the 70s. Imagine the cameras from the 70s, and everything's just rock solid and metal and heavy.
Me and you were there, actually. It's okay.
We don't have to imagine it.
We can just remember it.
well, okay. Take yourself back to the 70s. That's what I meant. Take yourself back to the 70s. But, you know, it's got an APS-C full-frame sensor in it. It's got the hybrid viewfinder is, like, amazing. It's amazing. Like, I was really impressed with it. It's a lot heavier than I expected, but it's just so, like, rock solid. Like, you know what I mean? Like, it would, like, I could see a working pro using this as reliable everyday equipment.
Mm. It's that good.
Really cool. Yeah.
So, I mean, yeah. It struck me as being one of the better of the point and shoots that are at the moment. And I think the price was pretty good, didn't we? We said it was going to be something around the $600 mark. $700 or $800, £600.
I'm trying to remember what they told me on pricing. It's going to be pricey.
We shall.
I don't know. You said, what did you say? 800, 900 pounds?
No. I thought it was going to be, because I think when we talked about it before, when it was due out, we were saying that we were quite shocked because it looked at kind of that pen, Olympus pen, you know, $1,000, £800 kind of market, but it was significantly lower. I've got it in my head. It was about £550.
I think they were saying something like 1,400. They haven't finalized the pricing.
No, maybe not.
But it's not. I mean, it's not a pen. It's not. It's definitely.
That's a camera.
That's a camera. No, I mean, it's not like a Micro Four Thirds. It's you know, the sensor's APS-C size. The camera is. It looks like a 35mm range, like Leica sized. It's the size of a Leica.
And we all know how good value for money they are.
Yeah,
absolutely.
It's interesting though when we first started talking about this you know, mirrorless new technology and all these new compacts, and we were going £1,000 for a, I couldn't even consider anything over £200 for a compact, and now we're going £600, £700. That sounds quite reasonable.
It's not a compact camera.
That's sort of the point. The fact that they've moved the technology on so much further that it's just. It's the quality you were getting out of a high-end DSLR a couple of years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And you're getting it in something you can hold in your hand. And if you're the type that is interested, you can point and shoot with it. I'd like to see you point and shoot with a D4 or a 1DX.
Mm.
You're getting a similar quality. That's the nice thing.
Yeah.
And it looks cool.
Yeah, my problem is, there's a lot of my trouble with these kind of cameras is the fact that I had that very thought sort of 5 years ago, and I bought myself a G9. And it was the biggest mistake I ever made in my life because it was a piece of crap. It wasn't a great camera at all. I don't think I got a very good one at that. I think I got one of the ones that was knackered because the noise that was on it, the resolution that was on it, I found it awful to take out. And there's no way on God's green earth that I considered taking a picture to try and sell on it. It was awful. Hmm. Not having it. I'd rather have a Leica. There we go. This podcast and many others would not be possible without the support of UK2. We rely on you supporting them, and we rely on them because without them all of the shows just disappear, plain and simple. We haven't got the resources to fund the 8.7 terabytes of data that disappeared off the server last month. We can't do it. We need them. Please support us by supporting them. Go to our website, use the click route when you just want to sign into your own account. And also, if you buy anything from them, have a look at their prices. If you do buy something with them, do bear in mind whatever price they've got on there, you're getting 15% off with the offer code BagelTech, and you're also not going to pay the DNS management charge if that turns up on your bill by typing in BagelDNS. And you can use both those codes so you get the best of both worlds. Take 15% off and take the 20 quid off or whatever it is for the DNS management charge. And you're laughing. They've supported us now for 2.5 years. We hope they're going to carry on supporting us through the rest of this year as well, because without them, we're lost. Please support UK2. We need your help by helping them. Cheers. Where can we get a hold of you, Chris?
I am a contributing writer at Ars Technica, so you can always find my work at arstechnica.com. And you can also find me on the Twitters at Foresmac, Foresmac.
Excellent. Thanks, mate. Yeah. Alex, you?
You can get me. Just get me at Alex G. Fox on Twitter.
And you and I will be at the Meat Porter's Pub tomorrow in Borough Market in London for the Bagel Tech photo and Elmug photo walk, won't we?
We will. I think it's a really silly thing to do, though, start off in a pub, because we're going to have to then persuade ourselves to go from a nice warm pub with beer and stand outside in the cold.
Well, my train gets in at 10:30 in the morning.
So you're going to be lying on a table in the pub.
I may be of no value whatsoever by the time 1 o'clock comes around, let alone 6 o'clock when we're talking about going for a curry.
Well, you'd be in a fighting mood by then. We should be all right.
I think Tone's train, because Tone's coming down from Nottingham for the event as well, and I think his train gets in at something like 9:15. So me and him might be carrying each other around.
Bring some coffee with.
Definitely. So be there tomorrow, the Elmug and Bagel Tech photo walk. If you've got a camera, it doesn't matter. Well, Alex didn't bring one last time at all, so it doesn't even matter if you haven't got a camera. If you just want beer, come along. But even like an iPhone or something like that, doesn't matter. Come down and have a walk around with us. Be at the Meat Porter's Pub in Borough Market at 1 o'clock, and we've got our little route, and we're going to go around and take pictures and have fun and drink beer, because there's a few pub stops on the way. It's not too bad. I'm Ewan Rankin. You can get me at Ewan Rankin on Twitter. You can follow us at Bagel Tech News on Twitter as well as. We're going to be back again next week, and we've got the Mac Show coming up next, so see you then. Thanks.
Bandwidth and hosting for Bagel Tech Photo is provided by UK2.net. Web hosting for everyone.